Here we got it. Here we go. You write to us, everybody. Step right up. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. You can text as well. Come on in through the State Roofing text line at 98973. Tom's back from his, what do you call that? Is it a mini vacation? How long were you gone for?
I was gone for a week.
How many books did you read in 1 week?
Three. So, you know, not that many.
Oh, my God. Big books or booklets? Like big books? Like heavy books?
Well, one was an Agatha Christie mystery. So those are like 200 pages, but they read like, you know, it's like cotton candy. You just whip right through them and stuff. And then I read a book. I read a book on Shakespeare.
Did you just find these books that's in the big library there? And you go, like, oh, look at this. And you take it off the shelf.
Okay, the Shakespeare book I brought with me because I bought tons of books. But the Agatha Christie, I determined I was going to read whatever available mysteries were there. Uh-huh. And so I would just take whatever was off the shelf there.
Yeah, okay, good for you. God, yeah. You know, I can tell you something. I'm a horrible reader, but I am jealous of your week.
Well, you know, John, and I know, but the thing is, you act like you're not a reader, and maybe literally you're not, but by listening to audiobooks, that's as good to me as reading, and so you could bring your little tape recorder, whatever you play your audiobooks, in the Shakespeare room, can listen to audiobooks.
No, I would read, but I'm just saying, reading for pleasure, it is painful and is slow. But I see people sit in comfy chairs with books, and they read, and they sip their tea or their wine, and they adjust their glasses, and it's like it looks so just absolutely intoxicatingly, just like at a whole another world. But when you're wrestling with words that are flying around in your head, and a K is upside down, and it looks like a P, and you're like, ah!
Yeah.
But I see you people, and I just admire your ability to read.
You know, you would love this placement, John, because up on the third or fourth floor, depending on whether you count the basement as a floor or not, they have a library. So you come out of your literary room, and then you have these windows out in the ocean.
What's the name
and
of
they
this place, offer Tom? You people free... want to go there. What's the name
it's,
of it?
It's called Sylvia Beach Hotel.
Okay.
Sylvia Beach was the woman who, living in France, although she was an American, published Ulysses for the first time in France because it was not allowed to be published here.
Uh-huh.
And the great thing is, so Sylvia Beach is like a famous...
Okay, we're losing them, Tom. We're losing them.
But the great thing is, but it's right on the beach. See, Sylvia Beach, so it's a play on the words. Very literary.
Okay.
But upstairs, John, you can have... they give you free mulled wine. So you can have tea or mulled wine and sit in your, you know, in the library and look out on the ocean and read or pretend to read. You can sleep there. Just soak up the atmosphere. Okay.
All right. So Trump nominates Amy Coney Barrett. Why do we have to do her middle name? Anyway, she is, here's the president.
I stand before you today to fulfill one of my highest and most important duties under the United States Constitution, the nomination of a Supreme Court Justice. Today it is my honor to nominate one of our nation's most brilliant and gifted legal minds to the Supreme Court.
So true, so true.
She is a woman of unparalleled achievement, towering intellect, sterling credentials, and unyielding loyalty to the Constitution, Judge Amy Coney Barrett.
The notorious ACB, she's known as. All right, so the president does it, and then he talks to the Barrett family.
For the last 3 years, Judge Barrett has served with immense distinction on the federal bench. Her family is a core part of who Amy is. She opened her home and her heart and adopted two beautiful children from Haiti. Her incredible bond with her youngest child, a son with Down syndrome, is a true inspiration. If confirmed, Justice Barrett will make history as the first mother of school-aged children ever to serve on the U.S. Supreme Court.
She's what, 48? 47, 48?
Yes.
Yeah. The Trump doesn't expect much controversy. Oh, really? Okay, well, let's see.
This should be a straightforward and prompt confirmation. I'm sure it'll be extremely non-controversial. We said that the last time, didn't we?
All right. A little humor there, a little irony. Okay. She took the moment to speak to the American people. Let's listen to the judge.
The president has asked me to become the ninth justice. And as it happens, I'm used to being in a group of nine, my family. But this evening, I also want to acknowledge you, my fellow Americans. If confirmed, I would not assume that role for the sake of those in my own circle, and certainly not for my own sake. I would assume this role to serve you. I would discharge the judicial oath, which requires me to administer justice without respect to persons, do equal right to the poor and rich, and faithfully and impartially discharge my duties under the United States Constitution.
Okay, so she's going to basically bring up the fact that if somebody tries to ask her about what she thinks about something, she'll pull the Ginsburg line, which is the Ginsburg rule of, look, I'm not going to comment on it, what I feel about it, I can't talk about it because if I have a case that comes up before me, I don't want to prejudice that, or I just, my own personal opinion is not that important. What I do is I interpret it by the law, the Constitution, and that's it. So she said that before. A lot of the questions were asked to her in 2017 when she was appointed there, the seventh court. She was that up in Chicago. So she got a chance, I think. When will they finally start to talk to her, Tom? Do we know when that's going to begin?
October 12th.
Okay. All right.
And they expect a vote, maybe just a few days before the election, but mm-hmm. before the election.
Okay.
So, you know, I always depend on you, John, uh-oh. For a proper perspective and context and all. And I could swear on Friday when we got this news at 4:30, we broke it and we handled it, you know, mm-hmm. talked about it two or three times mm-hmm. over the next 90 minutes, that you were assuring me, despite my reservations about the integrity of Mitch McConnell.
I didn't think he would move anyone forward.
Yes, I know. It's amazing. Remember, and I was chastised by the letter writers, the listeners, saying, oh, Tom, this is exactly what's going to happen. And they walked through and said, no, he'll wait until after the election because that would go against the Mitch McConnell rule in effect and all this. And son of a gun, if I come back a week later and not only have they named it, they've already figured out a time. So anyway, I just thought... I was amused over the course of my vacation.
I was completely wrong. Is what you're trying to do? That's a nice way of saying that. I would say this, that it's the latest polling shows that it's having no effect upon voters.
Yes.
That a lot of people are not like, it's not going to move me one way or the other. The only thing, I saw this interesting. They said the only thing that this where it could hurt the Democrats is that if they go after her personally, the way they did Kavanaugh, and if they start ripping into her and saying horrible things about her as a mother. Here's the Twitter. This came from, who's this woman? This Ibrahim X Kende, whatever his name is, how to be an anti-racist. Here's what he writes. Some white colonists adopted black children. They civilized these savages, children in the superior ways of white people, while using them as props in their lifelong picture of denial, while cutting the biological parents out of these kids and out of their picture of humanity. So if you get that kind of stuff from the left, it will help motivate, because they got to get the white college-educated suburban moms to go and start to think, well, I don't like the way they're treating that woman. That will possibly get someone maybe to come over and vote for Trump. But as it is right now, they don't think this is a game changer to move in one way or the other.
Okay, so first, in terms of polls, polling shows something like almost 70% of people think that Trump should have waited, that we should wait for the election for this. But obviously, it's a political power play, so that's not going to happen. Then the second thing is, the question is, who will this engage more? Mm-hmm. Will it remind evangelicals or some social conservatives who are not really happy with Trump's whole presentation of himself and the way, will they say, well, you know, will it be a reminder? Okay, so he may be an awful vessel, but he is somehow doing the Lord's will by getting the court filled, and so maybe I'll risk another 4 years. So that's one way to motivate. Was one way to motivate people on the right. And the way to motivate people on the left, there still is some question about how many Bernie bros, how many, you know, of the most progressive Democrats are going to vote for Biden because they feel like he's just not far enough along their political persuasion. Mm-hmm. This might, because she's now seen as a serious risk. I mean, the assumption, I think, is that Roe v. Wade will be overturned.
No.
If she gets on.
No.
If that's the case, that could be a concern enough for the liberals, the progressives, to join the liberals and, you know, make sure they vote for Biden. So it can go right now. You're right. Nobody knows if it's going to impact people. Right now, they say only between 2-4% of the populace hasn't, you know, made up their mind once and for all. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, elections can come down to 2 to 4%. So it could still sway things, but only on the margins.
Let's say this happens. I mean, this is like a scene from House of Cards. He puts her in there. She gets in, and then the Dems take over control of the Senate. They throw the filibuster out, and then they decide to pack the court. So, okay, you're going to go 6-3? Fine. We're, you know what we're going to do? We're going to throw three more in, throw four more in, and we're going to get all liberals in there. Joe won't show who's on his list because people would tear it apart. So we're going to get a buff in there. Then we'll swing it around the other way, and since you're getting rid of the filibuster, we're going to throw 15 in there, whatever it is, because nothing in the Constitution says how big the Supreme Court has to be, right? They've been, I think they've been nine for, I don't know, since 1872 or something like that. Yeah. So, in this case, fine. The Democrats take the, because there's a bunch of seats that are up in the Senate. Mm-hmm. They could easily flip this thing around. So you think, maybe will that motivate? Will that scare people and that motivate people to keep some senators in there in place to allow the Republicans to stay in control of the Senate? So who knows? There's a lot at play, but it'll be interesting to see how they go about questioning her without blasting away at her personal life as being a mom. And then, you know, are these children like this guy, this famous individual? He's a best-selling author. He writes for the New York Times. Adopting black children, right, just to be able to use them as props.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think
I wanted you to use the other kid that's got Down syndrome. Was that kid used as a prop too?
I don't know enough about her to know if
she's using kids as props.
I don't know. I don't know enough about her to know if she is or not. I wouldn't put it past Mitch McConnell, but to her, she sounds like a perfectly fine human being. I may disagree with her mental processes, but she seems legitimate. And by the way, I saw on Fox News there was a debate between Kenneth Starr and Lawrence Tribe.
Yeah.
Kenneth Starr obviously is the Clinton investigator, so he's on the right. Lawrence Tribe is a constitutional lawyer, I think from Harvard or Yale, on the left. And Lawrence Tribe says, as far as he knows of her, she's a fine nominee. He doesn't have a problem with the nominee. It's the nomination. Ah. It's the process. And I think that's a smart distinction.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to go after her, you know, her mental acuity. I think what they're going to do is they're going to ask her about how she justifies some of these stances she's taken in the past.
Mm-hmm. She is already. The case. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that she has weighed in on issues that will be before her coming up. And so that's going to be kind of a tricky dance for her. But I don't think there's any question. You've only got two Republicans who came right out and says, this doesn't feel right. This is not proper. We shouldn't be taking a vote. Mm-hmm. But when Mitt Romney said, I'm good with it, because he's a good social conservative. Yep. The assumption is, and I don't think anything is going to, the assumption is it'll be pretty much a straight party vote.
Right.
Unless
the Dems try a whole bunch of things where you can do a 2-hour thing and then not recess and then consent and non-consent to motion.
Well,
and
they
then
could slow it down.
A whole bunch of different things.
A day
you can do. Yeah.
Or two, but not enough to stop the election.
I've seen that there's many tricks that they can pull. All right. The fact that Cuomo does a piece to find out whether or not the tents that are around, the graffiti that's all over the place, the garbage, the shooting, the violence, the breaking of windows, the setting of fires. Are people coming here to enjoy that?
Seattle is known for a lot of things. The rain, its coffee, the Space Needle.
Seattle is such an inviting destination.
But Seattle has been in the news a lot lately. COVID-19 and business closures, wildfire smoke, and endless protests.
We're obviously experiencing so much right now, all converging at the same time.
Seattle's reputation is suffering. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Cuomo travel expert Steve Danishuk explains.
Nationwide, we're getting a bad reputation. We get tainted every time they talk about, you know, New York, Portland, and then they throw in Seattle, and it's just not helpful.
Seattle's.
By the way, Jason Rantz appearing on Tucker Carlson's not helping the matter, I might add.
Already facing its share of challenges with closures due to COVID-19 restrictions and then growing crime.
People are saying there's nothing left in downtown. Even the councilman we were recently talking to is disturbed about the disintegration of downtown. Over 100 stores closed. Columbia Sports were closed, but at Macy's.
Groups like Visit Seattle say they plan on launching an $8 million campaign next month to draw local and regional visitors.
We need to get people back into the city, helping those businesses, keeping those restaurants open that we all love. We all play a role in rebuilding Seattle.
The Seattle Hotel Association and Seattle Restaurant Alliance says this. The Emerald City continues to be the jewel of the Northwest, with some of the best and most critically acclaimed restaurants in the nation, beautiful and spacious hotels, and incredible hospitality staff.
I was downtown Saturday. It's weird. It is so weird down there. Pioneer Square, just completely empty, except for the tents and the derelicts and the homeless people.
I know,
and the shooting and the drugs and all
that
stuff.
But isn't that true of a lot of downtown cities? Because COVID has shut everything down.
Yeah,
I'm surprised that we're spending money trying to convince people to tourists, you know, local tourists, to even bother going downtown just because there's so many businesses that are closed. And, you know, the riots, the protests probably aren't helping much,
right.
but they're mostly up on Capitol Hill. The downtown area is a ghost town because of COVID. And I'm not sure, do we want $8 million worth of tourists in the downtown area? I don't know. I just find this whole story kind of puzzling.
Well, I think if you're probably sitting there and your stores are empty and you pay this money.
But are your stores even open?
Well, there's a lot of them down there. They're all boarded up. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know how much of it is. What is COVID related, and what is the dirt, the garbage, and the fear, and just generally not wanting to be down there? And then it's the it's the catch 22 that you're not open.
Yes,
right.
Yeah, that's the ultimate. I mean, it's just like I love New York City. I wouldn't go to New York City not because I think there are protests occasionally. It's because most of the things I want to see are shut down.
Well, they're all boarded up. I mean, they smashed all those windows all along Fifth Avenue. I mean, those big stores
big
are just
downtown.
Completely wiped out. Right.
No, I know, but
you want to go for the
customers.
Shopping and the window shopping in New York City. You can't buy anything, but you can look. They're all boarded up because of 400 years of oppression. Let's take a look at traffic. Okay, so King 5 is doing a whole thing on racism, right? They're doing all this.
Facing race.
Yeah,
a series of interesting journalistic effort here.
Good. So here we go. They've got somebody who's speaking to a woman who runs a site called Exposing Racism in the Pacific Northwest. It's a face group. Kara King 5 goes to chat with these two.
Asia Jones and her mom, Daphne, are rooting out racists with their Facebook group, Exposing Racism in the PNW.
4,217 pending posts about racist people.
The common goal, finding racists and putting them on blast.
For years, I was like, man, I wish there was somewhere I could go where I could see like the racist company's business. I definitely did not see it reaching 12,000. That's a lot of people. The first thing people revert to is, where do they work? You don't deserve to be working in public if you are a racist person.
So far, members of Exposing Racism in the PNW have made sure dozens of people were fired from their jobs.
I don't want it to just end at someone being fired. You know, we should be able to do something else and move forward.
Okay, so they find the people, and then they find out where they work. They put pressure on them, and they out them. And then the person loses their job. Here's another person speaks. The person was nervous to speak publicly. This is one of the people who they found a post that the person had put up. Then they go. King 5 goes and interviews her.
At first, Jenny Clillan doesn't want to share what she posted.
Because she posted something, and these women found it, and then they outed her, and then they were able to get her fired.
I'd rather not say.
After being canceled, she's anxious about being harassed. Listen to what she says mid-interview.
Are they gonna like shoot me or something, like the group?
What do you mean?
Like see this and then try to kill me?
What she posted got her fired from her job at a preschool in Lake Taps in June.
People will call me racism. Total accident. It's not what I meant. And it hurts me because I'm the most caring person anybody can ever meet.
Jenny eventually agrees to tell us about that Facebook post, which she wrote after passing a protester on the side of the highway.
I'm tired driving home. And she was holding up a Black Lives Matter sign, which I totally agree. Black Lives Matter. All lives matter. I mean, I pat her back. Then I said, and I kind of wanted to run her over, which I didn't want to run her over. There's no way I'm going to run her over. I mean, I've learned to be more careful with my words.
Okay. So these two women find this post somehow, and then I guess they call the school or do something to make her life uncomfortable. So she loses her job. I don't know if she has another job or she has to support someone. But basically, that's what they do. And they've been doing this for a while now. So then King 5, this is an interesting twist. They then take the interview that they did with a woman that lost a job and then take it to the two people that are in charge of deciding who's a racist or not and who deserves to lose their job. And they show her the interview, and they're like, wow, look at that. This woman is, like, completely out of it. She doesn't know all the things she's supposed to say in the new PC world. And then they said, well, maybe this isn't the best. I guess there's some slight realization where they, whether or not the two people that are in the canceling, whether or not they realize maybe this is not really having an effect, but they're going to keep doing what they're doing anyway. Is that the feeling you got from watching the 7-minute piece, Tom?
Yes. Yeah. And also, do we have any more audio?
Because I got a bunch of cuts. Okay. Then they had a woman running and they're reacting to the interview. And then I've got the woman talking about the cancel culture.
How about the professor?
Here we go.
So okay, does cancel culture work?
When people have asked me that question, they're expecting me to say no. And the saying of no to me means telling a certain group of people to be silent. And I'm not willing to tell anyone to be silent around questions of race, ever. What we need are these larger ways of creating education and structural change.
I can't say even doing anything to the individual solves much besides, you know, getting that individual out that establishment. Beyond that, I genuinely can't say that it solves racism.
It doesn't encourage people like Brandy to want to talk about race or people like Jenny to want to learn about it.
I guess that's a good thing to think about. And I could think about how we can go about educating them. Like I said, I don't think it's really an interest of theirs, you know, from what I've seen, you know. It's something I could always look into.
Okay. So you get the general idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think this raises all sorts of fascinating issues. They say, where did this impulse to create this website? And by the way, I don't know if you heard that. It has something like 13,000 followers on it. It's out of a frustration that they feel like there's racism that's allowed in this country that is not getting any attention or is getting any condemnation. And so they feel like, I'm going to draw attention to that, which I think can come out of a good thing. If you think it's good to correct people for racism, if you think we're too comfortable with racism, behaviors, then that's a way to call it out. Mm-hmm. The danger is by calling it out, are you really doing, you know, more damage than not by doing that? The problem with this is I think this is good to try to bring attention and raise awareness. Like that woman who said, I'd like to run over, I'm fighting the impulse to run over that Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. protester.
Right.
I think it's probably good for her to realize that when she posts something like that, that it might encourage, maybe not her, she says, I'm the nicest person around. But the fact that she feels comfortable expressing that, mm-hmm. other people might see that as permission giving or, you know, fellow. So I think being called out on the carpet is probably, you know, a good thing for some people just to become aware. It's just, I'm sorry I posted. I got to be more careful about what I say. At the same time, is it worth her losing her job? And a lot of these, there are a lot of people that supposedly lost their jobs, but the two people that the King 5 tracked down, one was like a receptionist and somebody was working at a preschool. These are not like high power, influential in
society
kinds
of jobs. It doesn't matter. They must be stopped. I don't know why we don't burn their houses down. We need to burn their houses down.
Well, no, and they don't see that.
They
thought it was
their
nice.
Houses, they need to lose their home.
No, they
just lose
need
their
to
job.
Be aware of the fact
well,
that they
we
are
we can begin with awareness by they get the
know.
Pink slip and they get fired. And then we burn their house down. We need to take their car and then burn that down as well. What we need to do is be able to stop people from thinking. Because the thing is, racism is a thought. Racism is a thought. To be a racist, to be a douchebag, to be whatever you want to be, you can be whatever you want to be. You can be a total jerk. Go ahead. I'll tell you what, we'll take this traffic break, we'll come back, and then we'll get a chance to explore this further because there's so much sound in this.
Good.
I never got a chance to say anything. That doesn't seem fair. All right, here we go. We don't really have much time in this break either, Tom, but King 5 doing a good job. They're doing a whole thing on race, and this is an interesting piece. They find these two people that go out, they find people that are saying racist things, and then they out them, and then I guess hopefully get them to be quote unquote educated, awakened, awoken, and fired, or whatever. They want to take, you say something racist, or you post something that's considered racist, you should then have to bear the responsibility for what happens next. So I guess in this case, two women lose their jobs. And then King 5 goes and takes the tape back to the two women that are responsible for this website that outs racist. And they're like, wow, look at that. She doesn't really know what she's talking about. And it seems like we should probably, we could educate them differently. This might not be the best way. So there's a little bit of a realization on the part of the people that are running the website that maybe this isn't the thing that maybe we're not really achieving anything. Right.
Yeah, because yeah. One of the two women they interview say, this just makes me not want to talk about race at all. Like, I'm just better off not saying anything. Yeah. And they realize that's not the solution either. I suppose it's better. It's rather have a neutral than a negative. If you think somebody's saying racist things and you call them out on it and they stop saying racist things, I guess that's good. But if they never bring up the issue of race, it's not really going to solve the problems either. And so that's what's an interesting turn on that. And the women that are running this said, well, that's disappointing to hear because that's not the effect that they want to have.
Right.
They don't mind. However, and again, there's still a final turn is they do say, even if it doesn't change things, and they realize that racism is such an endemic problem that they're not just, you know, two women running the website, they're not going to be able to root it out.
Yeah.
But they say that they really do think that it does something good for, you know, their community. It actually does expose. It gives them some peace that they're doing something to call people out on
it. If you're going to be oppressed, you have to find the oppressor. So what you really do, you really need racists. These two women need to find these racists because you're going to have the innocent and the evil. So here's my point, and I'll just say this because you had a chance to talk earlier. Being a jerk is not illegal. Being a racist is not illegal. Being a complete absolute is not illegal. You can think whatever you'd like, but if you happen to be hiring somebody or if you happen to be having an apartment you want to rent, you cannot discriminate on that person. You can't put a racist thought into action that therefore takes away someone's civil rights. You will never, ever be able to out racist, just like you'll never be able to stop people from being D-bags or whatever other thing you'd like to refer to somebody, because it's human nature to have thoughts and feelings. You will never be able to eradicate it. And by the way, these two women, you're going to think your life is going to be better by asking racists to change their minds? First of all, I don't even think these people are racist. The lady puts up some dumb thing, some meme or whatever reason she puts it up, and these two women then cause her to lose her job. Do you think that makes life any better? And by the way, your life is not so bad because that woman put that meme up there. What responsibility do you take for your own life? It is not a racist that goes around killing a bunch of people. That is not racism. Racism has been eradicated by this country by getting rid of laws. It still exists in the hearts of men, both black and white. Everybody hates this group, hates that group, hates this group. You'll never eradicate hate. Never, ever, ever. All you got to do is just make sure it doesn't go in to affect someone's ability to get a job, have a place to live, or whatever else it is. So you can chase this stuff all the way you want, and this person doesn't have a job anymore. Is their life any better because you posted that? No, it doesn't change anything, but it makes you feel good because you hunted somebody down that you've determined to be a racist. Because morally, you're on some high ground where you're able to take shots at people. You don't like what they said. If we decide later on, racism, plan, expand this out into other thoughts, other feelings that we want to eradicate so that everybody's thinking the same thing. Good luck. What a scary world that would be.
Now, she says in her defense that with her group of 13,000, it brings us a sense of peace. There's not much we can really do, but this is but with this, we have a little peace of mind to at least call that to your attention. I think you're right. You're not going to be able to change.
Nope.
But if you get people to realize, make them more aware of things that are inadvertently racist, perhaps in their minds, to think, oh, yeah, there are consequences. That could be a good.
Right.
But yes, it does have this stench of vigilantism, too, which makes me uncomfortable. That's why I think the whole facing race issue raised by this is it's multidimensional. It's very good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're more racist now than we were in the 50s. That's amazing. All right, here, let's take a look at traffic.